All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, March 16th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to get you started and keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. As always, head on over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. MLB, less than 2 weeks away, 13 days till opening day for baseball. It's all covered on the one subscription package. We don't section it off by sport or content provider or, you know, set up special packages for one sport. We just, if we have it on the site, we have it for you all under one sub, free for 3 days, and then $34.95 a month. You're all good to go. Friday in the NBA is a smaller one than usual after a pretty big Thursday. Only six games on the schedule tonight. You know, last night we get the Ante Zizek. He's starting. No, he's not starting. And 61% of people, kind of just at least in cash, a little higher on DraftKings, stare at Ante Zizek and wonder if and when at any point he's going to come into the game. Do you think this is like the new? I mean, this is like a funny thing about NBA DFS now, especially with tighter pricing, that a guy like Zizek, where he is, he's basically a non-basketball entity. So I'm not saying that he's good or whatever. He's just kind of a guy that exists in the basketball space. But sort of the way the pricing has come down and just how difficult it is to find punt plays, we find ourselves with this guy who's like pretty chalky owned and then not played at all. Do you think that, like, is it like 60%? I mean, obviously he gets scratched or not scratched. He obviously, they change the starting lineup at the end and they go really, really small. But do you think that him being so highly owned is more of a service of like, oh, the pricing is too tight and we're just willing to take a risk on this guy? Do you think there's like something else going on? Like, I find that like funny that this kind of like unknown guy all of a sudden is going to be a very chalky play, and everyone now is just staring at the 6 minutes that he played. Like, what do you think when you see like that kind of thing happening?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a couple factors. First, like you mentioned, there is tighter pricing. The sites are adjusting more for matchup, for instance, which will, you know, make the, like it used to be, if you had a game against a Phoenix team like this, you could just play everybody and pretty safely get away with it. I think big money players are all more expensive now than they used to be too. So, you know, like we never saw LeBron crest over 12,000 on FanDuel, for instance, in the past. The highest, I think Westbrook was the first player to go over 12,000 since we started playing DFS. And it was like a while before anyone else reached those different heights. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of different extenuating factors. I also think it's just a late season NBA thing. You know, in the past, we get in the late season NBA, these guys no one's ever heard of kind of creep into the starting lineup. It used to be, given that overall pricing was a little bit lower, that you didn't have to necessarily stick your neck out every time a random punt play came across the table. But given that there are, because you also used to get like, I don't know, some guy, Tyler Ulis or something, just be $3,500 for like 2 weeks and you could just keep playing him. So there are fewer punt plays in general. The big money plays are more expensive, so you have to reach more to get them. And yeah, just late season NBA craziness, I think. And the last factor, the chalk factor, is just based on the spread of information. DFS now is a harder game than it's ever been in the past. So the combination of all those factors leads to 61% Zizek and 61% of people feeling pretty grumpy at some bad reporting.
Yeah, our lineups get there anyway, like on the back of Michael Beasley, who I didn't really want to play, but he ended up being pretty good. And I think that too, it's like not just the super cheap guys. It's like it's the pricing even in those middle tiers. Like you get a guy, and we're going to talk about in the first game here, like a guy like Terry Rozier, where in the past we were looking at maybe like a $5,000 up to $6,000 Terry Rozier, and now all of a sudden we're looking at an $8,001 two games into Kyrie Irving being out. Like the price corrections on these guys are pretty massive and pretty quick. I'll hand it to, well, I mean, Cleveland just is a total mess. I mean, they didn't play Zizek, but they ended up going small, and they fronted Nurkic with Jeff Green last night to see how that would work. Didn't really work. I mean, it didn't work out so bad for them in that one-on-one matchup, but they still lost the game. So they're a team that they got issues. I don't know if they're going to be completely solved, but it'll be interesting to see come playoff time, like what their overall plan is, especially if these injuries kind of keep creeping up. All right, Boston goes in and plays Orlando. Boston is pretty much set in the playoffs, so they're not worried there. They, I guess that they probably were at one point wanting to fight it out for the top slot in the East. They're already five games back from the Raptors, so I don't think they're kind of stuck in the middle. There's almost no chance they're going to catch Toronto. There's almost no chance the Pacers are going to catch them. So we're left with a Boston team that probably knows its fate and now heads kind of down the ramp into the playoffs. I don't know. What do we make of teams like this? You know, they're very injured right now, so there's no Kyrie again. Horford is probable, so it looks like he's going to come back tonight. But they're still without Kyrie. Well, he's doubtful, but I don't think he's going to play. And then Jaylen Brown is not going to play either, but Horford is going to come back. Like, how do we handle a Boston team that probably, I mean, incentivized to win, incentivized to keep their players fresh, but probably not incentivized to go overboard on any one particular player or like play anyone kind of crazy minutes? What do we do with, you know, when you think about the minutes for a Boston team, do you want to be out on a limb in a good matchup here? Or do you think that maybe they all just kind of trend toward the middle and this is maybe a better place to avoid them?
Yeah, I think it's a better place to avoid them kind of simply because you're also seeing, I mean, a couple factors. The blowout's always in play when they play against Orlando. The next thing is that all these guys are really expensive after the double overtime game. You're seeing price jumps. I mean, Rozier jumped by 900. Tatum, I think, is almost 1,000. Marcus Morris is in that same neighborhood. So you're seeing a lot of price increases here that are not necessarily backed up by what these guys were doing in normal game scripts. You'll see if you look at it that a lot of them needed every minute of that double overtime to get there on their current prices in a more than reasonable matchup if you're going to get 10 extra minutes of playing time. So like Rozier at 8,200, there's just no way I'm going to run him out there at that price.
Yeah, I agree. He's just too expensive. All these guys are probably just too expensive. I don't think they're going to go overboard their price short of a, like you said, a double overtime game. I just don't think that the plan is to go nuts with the minutes, especially with the core guys. Tatum, Horford. I mean, I don't see Rozier as a core guy, but he is a rotational player that will play in the playoffs. So he's another one. Even guys like Baines played a lot more than normal last game, Morris. So I don't think we're in a spot where, even in a good matchup against Orlando, because they're not very good on defense, that we want to kind of go crazy. And the line kind of reflects that. Boston only -6 against a very bad Magic team. What about the Magic side? Look, Aaron Gordon is questionable right now with a concussion. He's dealt with concussion issues for kind of a few weeks now. He's questionable. The rest of the team, fairly healthy. Jonathan Simmons coming off a huge game the other day. Boston's not a great matchup, but these Orlando guys aren't crazy expensive either. I don't fully trust. I take that back. Simmons is up to 7,000. Maybe these guys are a little bit too expensive.
These guys are pretty
expensive. Yeah, never mind. I'm going to reverse track on that. These guys are pretty expensive. Is this another case of even with somewhat steady minutes, the prices are just too much in this matchup?
Yeah, I'd rather not, probably. I think one guy maybe we can look at is DJ Augustine. I think he's the only guy who's priced under what his real opportunity is right now. We almost played him on DraftKings against Milwaukee. He just wound up in lineup two, went out there for 36 minutes, 45 fantasy points. I think that at 5,500 on FanDuel right now, he's totally playable at that price. I mean, in a game that you think might be close. But I think the other guys, like Jonathan Simmons at 7, he's just barely paying that reliably, and not even reliably in my mind. And the minutes can go away for him, as we saw against San Antonio. So yeah, I don't think I'm going to reach my neck out there in a slow and bad matchup with Boston. Vooch is another guy. He was 35% owned. A lot of that was just the terrible options at center against Milwaukee, but got 54 fantasy points. I don't think you can rely on him for that in what should be a much tougher matchup against Horford and Bane. So I don't think that I'll go here a lot for the Orlando squad, but you know, I guess I wouldn't rule it out depending on how the rest of the slates shakes out or news or what have you. But now, right now, I think this whole game, unfortunately, is just kind of not one I'm super interested in.
Yeah, and I don't even trust these minutes. I know Augustine played 36. That really hadn't been anything that he had been doing leading up to that. Maybe if they, you know, he catches a hot hand or whatever, but it's really hard to give him more than, say, like 31 or 32 minutes on a given night. I just think just because of the way the Magic are playing. Now,
I agree. I think that also might just be enough to get him in there, too. But I guess we'll see.
It's close, yeah. The next game, Brooklyn goes in and plays Philly. No real injury news and notes on this one, except for Jared Allen's going to come back. They had started the Nets had started Dante Cunningham at center the other night, so have fun with that. But it looks like Jared Allen is going to come back and play. The Sixers here are another team. They are on the back to back here. Now there's no news on Joel Embiid. So the only reason I say that is because in the past the Sixers have been very careful with playing Embiid on back to backs. They've gotten away from that a little bit in the short term as they started to, you know, they started to bring him in. But he did play last night, and I don't know. I get, even without the injury news, even without like no formal note on Embiid, would you be a little concerned? I mean, he played 32 minutes last night in the win against the Knicks. Would you be concerned at all that those minutes dip back down just as they try to manage him getting into the playoffs? They're another team. They're not probably worried at this point, or not worried at all about getting into the playoffs. It would only be a matter of whether they were worried about their playoff seeding. Does the back-to-back scare you at all with Embiid? I know we're going to get that question tonight.
Yeah, it does scare me. And it doesn't scare me in terms of him playing or not. I think that he'll probably be out there. But, you know, the price is up now, 10-6 in this Brooklyn matchup. We've seen kind of recently the plan when it's close is to play him more like 28 to 31 minutes. I think there's almost no chance you see the full 34. The last back-to-back he played 31 minutes. The back-to-back before that, he did play 34, but that was after a 23-minute game. The most he played in a back-to-back prior was 33. So I think that now that the playoff seeding is somewhat solidified, I think the true expectation here is something like, yeah, like I said, 28 to 30 minutes. And I think at that price point, it's close. I mean, Brooklyn is one of the very best matchups possible for an opposing center, but I am definitely, and I also think if this game should get out of hand for whatever reason, he's the first guy to come out. So I think all those factors together leaves me feeling a little bit nervous about running him out there. And I think he'll probably be pretty highly owned too. So at this point, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of clarity around where we'll wind up landing tonight.
Yeah, that's interesting about the ownership. I wonder about that too, because I do think that will be on people's minds. Again, this is all speculation. There's no news on this.
It's just a small slate, and you can go through these teams and the center options tonight. Center is pretty damn bad. Like, you can go, right. We kind of ruled out the centers in the Boston game. Brooklyn has no center. Dallas has no center. The Raptors effectively have no center at that price point. Clippers, Thunder, I guess there's centers in that game. Heat, Lakers, speculative. Kings, Warriors, no centers play in that game. So you have only a few options, and you know, depending on how the other price points shake out, like, a lot of people might just wind up going the Embiid route.
Yeah, that's interesting. And we'll kind of wait to hear how that shakes out over the course of the day. If anything comes out, obviously, there might be a pivot if he were to sit, or if they just did start to manage him. But we're just having to speculate. On the Brooklyn side, they are a team that's still running. You know, last game they came out and played Toronto pretty tough to start. Then Toronto just had their way with them in the second half. We didn't see any of the starters get more than 30 minutes, except for D'Angelo Russell, who was great. He went 10 for 22 from the field, went 7 for 12 from 3, got to the line a little bit, ended up with a 32.7 rebound game in 35 minutes. Now, he is not a guy whose numbers can be, his minutes really can't be trusted at all, but he has upside. And really, actually, the only thing that keeps him from being a play is these minutes, because on a per-minute basis, he's really been excellent this season. He's under 7,000 on FanDuel, and I think he's right in that same range on DraftKings as well. Yes, 6,500. I only have him at 29 minutes right now, and he's pretty close to coming in as a top points per dollar play. Would you be comfortable rolling a guy like him out, knowing that there's some games where it's just going to be 27 to 28 minutes, but then you do have the upside? But then you get these 35 minute games where he's, you know, among the best shooting guards in the game in terms of fantasy scoring. What are your thoughts here on Russell?
Well, I mean, you kind of spelled it out. Go look at Russell's game log and juxtapose it to Dinwiddie's. This is something I like to do when I'm trying to figure out the actual safety of a team, because when we're trying to figure out the safety of a team, I think one of the things we like to do is try to figure out, is there a plan for the starters in games that are close, right? And what's the plan for the starters in games that are not as close, and then blowouts, right? And as we go through, the teams that we can consider the most projectable, picture like the Timberwolves or the Warriors. Generally speaking, it's like, we're going to play our guys. If we're in a close game, we'll keep playing our guys. And when the game doesn't get close, we pull our guys. The Nets don't really offer that same level of assurance. Like, Russell can play 34, 28, 22. And in that same exact period of time, you can go and see Dinwiddie play 28, 28, 22. So, okay, the plan in the Charlotte game, they pulled everybody. In the other games, it was like, we're just mixing and matching, kind of doing whatever. We're loosey-goosey. And that's not where I like to be for my cash games. Now, obviously, at certain prices, like, if you think Russell is an attractive play at 28 minutes, I mean, he did score 34 fantasy points against Philly in that much time last time they played, then sure, you can play him tonight. I don't think he's an attractive play at that number of minutes, and so I'm going to be a little bit more cautious. And I think the Nets, these erratic teams, again, on a six-game slate with a lot of bad teams and bad matchups, you're going to have to kiss a few frogs tonight and hope to find your prince. But I think that, yeah, Brooklyn is... they're going to be down my list of frogs, I guess, if I have to be choosing tonight. And so, yeah, that's just kind of my overall thoughts on almost all the Brooklyn guys, I think.
Yeah, ooh, I like James's list of frogs. That's like a recurring content piece as we go forward. Yeah. But and then we can watch you kiss some of them. But yeah, sure. I think I generally agree. I do kind of hope we get some news out of Philly. Like I said, I'm just gonna round back out to that for real quick. Is that we get some news out of Philly that they're starting to manage some minutes on some of these guys. And if that's the case, I do think we can probably find some value. I see Russell as a pretty solid GBP play, and I'm with you that it would be hard pressed to trust him in anything like a cash game. Dallas goes in and plays Toronto. Toronto is a minus 11 favorite here. They are getting a little bit healthy. Now, they're on the back-to-back as well, but they're not on the back-to-back. They are getting a little healthier. Anunoby is back in the starting lineup, though you really can't go crazy with his minutes. Kind of a blowout risk, slow game here. Dallas has really, they shook up their starting lineup with no Wes Matthews the other day. They started Dorian Finney-Smith, but he really only played 21 minutes, and only Harrison Barnes played 34 minutes. No one played more. Everyone basically played less. I don't know. I'm hesitant to keep saying skip on some of these games, except that I just don't see a ton to really love about this one, and I get that there's only six games on the slate.
Yeah, I don't see a ton to love about this one, frankly. I mean, on the Dallas side, yeah, you've had some opportunity opening up here and there. It hasn't really amounted to much from a DFS perspective outside of when JJ Barea has gotten increased minutes. Yogi Ferrell, it's never mattered if he's played more minutes. Dennis Smith Jr. seems like he's still adjusting from this injury thing, and it's a bad matchup with the Raptors, and there's blowout risk. Like, I just don't think you can trust this game very much on either side of the ball. I will say, I think we maybe glossed over a couple of the Philly guys, though. Like, I think there are some other playable options on that team if you are looking for players you can actually play. Guys like Robert Covington, maybe even Saric to some degree. But yeah, unfortunately, this game, who do you want to play from this thing outside of big tournaments? Like, you can't play Lowry and DeRozan at increased prices, right? Like, I don't see where anyone goes here.
No, I don't want to play anyone here. I mean, again, the Valanciunas' price is way up and the matchup's not that good, mostly because of the pacing issues. It's not that Dallas is really a good defensive team. It's just that they just still run, as long as Dirk's going to be on the court, they're never going to be a fast team anyway. And they're just a slow team overall. Harrison Barnes kind of like plays in a slow half court sets. That's just their plan. And the game has a 212 over under, which is the least in the slate. And most of that's coming on the Toronto side, and we already know that they play super deep rotations with the game, and this game, strikes me as just the exact kind of game that the starters aren't going to see crazy amounts of minutes. So I think if I was going to level the skips, like, which this game is much more of a skip than the Boston Orlando game, I think you can probably find some reasons to get in maybe some of those Boston guys at their prices. I do not think, I just want to maybe make sure that I'm not just calling them all equal. This game is probably the least attractive of any on the entire slate.
Well, real quick though, before we move on, because I think Valanciunas is a guy people are going to call out as a big upside guy in our chat tonight. I just want to highlight this for a second because I think this is a teachable moment. It's very easy to get, don't giggle at me when I say teachable moment.
It's just so didactic, but I like it. I like it and I appreciate it.
So the people listen to this podcast presumably to learn things. They're not just to hear you tell people what the spread is and the over-under and who's injured. People also want to learn, okay? And that's why I'm here. You're here to just read stuff off the internet and I'm here to teach. So
teach
let's
us.
Continue. Thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome in advance. So with a guy like Valanciunas, the question, and we brought this up many, many times through the course of this podcast and in our articles across multiple different sports. There are a lot of factors that have to come together for a player to fundamentally change. Valanciunas is now priced at an all-time high, and he's still playing 27 minutes a game. And so you have to ask yourself, isn't he now a true talent, 14 to 17 rebound a game guy? Or could this be just a clustering effect on a couple of great matchups with Brooklyn and Indiana and sort of running hot probably as well? Like, I don't think you could even pencil him in for that number of rebounds in those minutes in those matchups if they were to replicate them tomorrow. And if not, what are you really hoping for here? Because you only have to go back a week to get a stretch of games from him at 15 fantasy points, 19, 14, 23, 30, 24. That's in a row, by the way. I'm not picking and choosing his worst games. So I don't think there's any reason to be optimistic at all about him on these price points. Obviously, he's a big tournament play potentially, but I think a lot of people are going to understand that when you see a guy at 7,400 who's coming off a 51-point fantasy game. But I don't think anything's changed about the guy. I won't be playing him in any format. Expect him to see him be over-owned in big tournaments and in cash. So I'm staying away. Go ahead and prove me wrong, JB. The gauntlet's on you now. And if you're listening and you learned something from this, Jonas Valanciunas, don't get discouraged because you probably are working pretty hard at that.
I hope he learned something too. I learned something and I hope he learned something.
Someone transcribes, please, and email it to his agent because he could probably stand to learn from it. But you can proceed now. Go ahead.
Clippers go in and play the Thunder. I'm going to have trouble getting to this. Clippers go in and play the Thunder in what probably is going to be a game. Definitely the marquee matchup of the night in terms of like Clippers still fighting for their playoff lives. OKC is not in the driver's seat necessarily. They are currently fourth in the West, but as we've said before, being fourth in the West could change this could change within one game because they're still only a game up in the loss column on the Spurs and the Clippers, who are kind of slotted into that last spot. So the East remains very close. The West remains very close with the Clippers outside looking in right now. So this is I would consider this to be a pretty high leverage game. That being said, we're looking at some sort of weird pricings for some of these guys as well. We saw Lou Williams. We talked at length about Lou Williams on Tuesday as he's been moving into the starting lineup. Had another game where he wasn't bad necessarily, but 34 minutes and does not get there on what is now a steadily decreasing FanDuel price down to 7,200. He scored 32 fantasy points. So again, it's not a total crusher, but that's really not where you want to land in terms of just like points per dollar. Just kind of from a points per dollar perspective, this is really not where you want to land. Not a great matchup here against OKC, though. They are worse defensively since they lost Roberson, so they have been getting slightly worse on defense. Let's start with Lou Will and then talk about some of these other Clippers guys. They are underdogs. The game rates to stay close. He's not going to draw some crazy matchup. I'll probably draw Corey Brewer. Would you be willing to play a guy like him in cash games? He's coming into a lot of our lineups right now, and I don't know if we want to have downward guidance on his projection just because since he entered the starting lineup, he just hasn't been getting it done at this price.
Yeah, he hasn't been getting it done at this price, and yet when I look at the peripherals, it's kind of the reverse correlation of the Jonas Valanciunas thing. Like, shot 18 shots, would love to see that. He didn't get to the line, and that is something that's starting to concern me, that's feeling a little bit less like run bad and a little bit more like, you know, maybe a change in play style, given that he's in the starting lineup now. Like, maybe he's just not playing as reckless, just crashing around, figuring he has to 1v5 the other team. So we don't like that, but if you think that comes back, then he obviously becomes a much better play. 0-for-2 from 3 last night, very uncommon. He hadn't shot only 2 3-pointers in a game in a really, really long time. And obviously he's expected to make more than 0% of his 3-pointers as well. That's just my back of the napkin math, but I do think that's correct. So you had a lot breaking wrong for him last night, but the opportunity still appeared to be there. The 37 minutes were very reassuring. Like I said, he was getting shots in the air. He was getting in the lane. He wasn't getting to the line. I still am probably more bullish on most people than Lou Williams. I think the price is probably too low. I still don't know if you want to play him in a really tough matchup with OKC, but hey, tonight, like I said, small slate, we have a lot of skips here. I think if Lou Will winds up in our final lineups, I wouldn't X him out, you know? Like, he almost, 27 fantasy points is not good on a $7,200 price tag, but it's pretty good considering he shot 33% from the field and 0% from three and only got to the line twice, right? Like, so I think there's still upside to dream on here with Lou Will, and I understand people's frustration as well.
Yeah, and we saw big minutes last night. I mean, they are on the back-to-back. I don't think that's going to matter for them. We did see big minutes out of their starters last night. Tobias Harris played 40 minutes. Jordan played 35, which is a little less than him, but he was in just a little bit of foul trouble. He almost fouled out of the game. But then Rivers, 39 minutes, and then Lou Will, 36. Do we want to be really aggressive on their minutes? I mean, do we want to set Tobias Harris at like 38, 39 minutes? Austin Rivers at 37, 38? It seems like this is probably what they're going to want to do in closer games. These are also guys that need every single minute to hit fantasy value at their current prices. So I always get a little bit worried when that's the case too, when we're going at peak minutes to just scrape into value on their prices, if that makes sense. Like, I don't like, that's not a spot I like to be, because that feels like there's just too many ways for that to go wrong. Now, Lou Williams does not strike me. We only have him at 35 minutes. I think that's probably the baseline. But what do you think about these other starters? Like, do you think in a game against OKC where they basically have to win, especially after the loss to the Rockets last night, are we comfortable setting Tobias and those other guys like maybe even closer to 40 minutes?
Potentially. I just don't know if they're playable regardless. I mean, Harris, I think you can make a fairly strong case for. He is the guy that keeps going out there and basically delivering on these price points. There are exceptions there, but it seems like 35 fantasy points a game, you can kind of pencil him in for that, and that there's upside built into those prices if he runs hot from the field or with the defensive stats or what have you. So I kind of like him. It's not exactly clear how the Thunder are going to D them up. I think I really like him if he's up against Melo. I like him a little bit less potentially if he draws Paul George. Not worried at all about Corey Brewer. So yeah, I think Harris is playable here. I think some of these other guys like DeAndre Jordan, I think you have to squint fairly hard to make it work at 8,400 for him. Tough defensive matchup as well if Adams winds up playing. So I don't know. Then the point guards, Rivers and Teodosic, both of them are too expensive for me, like for their current production, and I wouldn't be taking them regardless of how must they feel like this game is. So
yeah, and Teodosic, I'm just too concerned about the minutes. He will come in and play the bench off the bench at times, yeah. but it's just not consistent enough.
That's what I mean. And Thornwell, he got the minutes, but good lord, like
oh yeah,
talking about a guy who can be out there for 36 minutes, and they're like, hey, has anyone seen Sindarius? I would like to put him in. Like, coach, he's already in. No, he's. He is in. Okay. Well, sorry.
I looked at the Jumbotron. And he had no stats, so I just kind of assumed.
I saw all straight zeros across the board, and I was like, Jesus, I forgot to get Sindarius. And it's like those dreams when you're back in high school and you forget your locker combination. It's just
I
like,
still have those dreams. At 37 minutes, it took him 37 minutes to get 6 points, one steal, and an assist. That is butting up against
as bad as
you could be points per minute. Really for anybody, it's not the worst of the season for sure. So he's not going to fall into that category. But man, it's getting close. On the OKC side, the news we're waiting to hear on is Steven Adams is questionable right now. He did sit out last game. They started Dakari Johnson, but really played Jeremy Grant was got the lion's share of the minutes as they went very small. So I think we'll have to wait. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait.
And Jeremy Grant was phenomenal, by the way. Expect him to see high ownership percentage. And he's like the reverse of Sindarius Thornwell. He's kind of effective on a points per minute basis anyway. And the extra upside for more playing time seems to really matter. So he's a punt play I could see getting into even if Johnson draws a start again.
Exactly. We just got to wait on the Adams news. And with a thing like that, I really hope that's not a thing that they're testing in pregame warmups. I hope that we just kind of know prior to lock. One other guy I'm wanting your opinion on, his price is coming up, but he's getting very steady minutes and opportunity. That's Corey Brewer. Corey Brewer has played 30 or more minutes the last three games. Doesn't get up a ton of shots, six to eight shots in all three of those games. A couple threes, but he's really done it everywhere else. Steals, some rebounds, assists. He's easily hit value on these prices, even with the increase. Yeah. Like he's up to $4,900 on FanDuel and right in that same range on DraftKings. And also, I look at that line and I say, well, this is a nice, he's $4,400 on DraftKings, so it's actually a little bit more palatable there. But I look at these lines and I wonder, you know, is this sustainable for this kind of guy? It's very hard to be fantasy Corey Brewer to be fantasy relevant for a long time on a team like OKC simply because it has Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George, which means you're never going to get a lot of shots, right? Like you're kind of just hoping the ball bounces your way. And when I look at these lines for him, I do get the sense that this is very much like ball bounced my way a lot more than usual kind of thing. Like that, and I really can't expect it. Like three steals and two blocks last game does not feel sustainable. I get that he is a defensive player, but I don't know. What are your thoughts here? I think I could see him being highly owned because of the recent games, and I could also. Of anyone that I think that will be a popular play, he seems like the guy really just kind of like in the range of not going to hit value just because I don't really trust how he's been getting it done.
Yeah, the bubble seems fixing to burst on Brewer to me as well, at least in the scoring category. I do think he is, you know, he's a guy we've seen in the past be the type who can contribute across the board when he's out there and playing meaningful games. Like you said, he used to be considered something of a defensive specialist, although obviously at his advanced age now, that's going to be difficult for him to sustain. But I think what you really like here is the minutes. You know, we actually played him against Phoenix and San Antonio, and that was at like a $3,600 price tag, and we wouldn't even be talking about it at that price, I imagine. We just run him out there. $4,900 is a little bit harder to sustain, but I think if you use that Phoenix game, I think the scoring from those two games is probably a reasonable proxy for what you can sort of expect here. I think if you average this all out, you're looking at something like 5x points per dollar. I think you see really good matchups against Atlanta and Sacramento. I don't think it's that different here. I think it's mostly going to come down to, is this slate bad enough and small enough that we want to play Corey Brewer? Because he's not, like at $3,600, if you'd seen his track record, he's like a build-around punt. Like you start with him, and then you fit in the pieces around it. At $4,900 to $4,400 on DraftKings, it's more like, does this just enable us to play real players at other positions? Which is the kind of question you wind up asking yourself when you have so many games that look like skips. Right now, he is coming in on DraftKings with a fantasy point total projected at 23. That seems totally reasonable to me, and I would suspect as things develop throughout the day, he'll probably just wind up staying in lineups.
Yep, I agree. And I do. My sense is he does not get there on FanDuel, and I think I'd just be...
He really enables things on DraftKings too, like just the multi-position eligibility, the slightly lower price point. Yeah, I'm into it for sure.
And I can't remember if we said this on the podcast, or maybe you and I were just talking about this, but the only other reason I'm sort of confident on him is that he's a veteran, and I do think it's easier for a veteran to play with these guys than it is for, like, a Terrence Ferguson, right? Like, I think that kind of matters. Like, I think that he's, like, not going to be, I hate to use this, I almost never talk about stuff like this, but, like, scared to shoot, basically. Like, I can't imagine it's easy for rookie kind of younger guys to walk in and play with that starting unit because, I don't know, there's just a lot of big personalities, and these guys are absolute superstars. And Corey Brewer, I think, has just been around long enough that wouldn't matter to me, and I'm just basing that on nothing more than my own opinion, which I try not to really get into those realms too much, but it kind of strikes me as possibly true for Brewer. Before we get to these 10:30 games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go and play one-off daily fantasy sports contests where basically you can issue a one-on-one challenge. So if you have a strong feeling tonight, let's see who would be a good example. So say you had a strong feeling tonight about Embiid versus, I don't know, Kevin Durant. You could go in there and say, I think Embiid's going to outscore Kevin Durant. You could issue that challenge to the world, any dollar amount that you'd like. Other people that use the NoHalftime app could be free to use it or to take up you up in your challenge or not. And if they didn't, no problem. You get your money back. If they did, it's game on. You can also go through their awesome app and troll around for challenges other people have issued. There's value in there on a day-to-day basis for the smart DFS player, especially leading up to lock as situations change and so forth. So go check them out, NoHalftime.com. Download the app. Use promo code DFSR to get a $50 bonus up to 50% on your first deposit.
Two 10:30 games here. The first is the Kings and the Warriors. Warriors are -12 favorites, so we're probably looking at something close to the blowout, mostly because we're one of the best teams is playing one of the absolute worst teams. Injury news and notes for Golden State that are relevant. It looks like Draymond Green is going to be back and playing tonight. He sat out when they played with the skeleton crew the other night, but he's going to be back in. But Klay Thompson is still going to miss the game, and obviously Curry is still out as well. So without their entire backcourt, they're going to probably continue starting. My guess is they start Quinn Cook, although he's now questionable. And I guess he's probable now. Quinn Cook and then Nick Young started at the two, then Durant and Draymond, and they've been switching around the center. They started Zaza last game, and I guess that sticks. I'm not really sure what the rhyme or reason for who gets to start at center is. Now, a couple different problem areas possibly here. One, there's a possibility of a blowout, of course. Maybe that's just the whole problem, because otherwise it seems like, you know, a Golden State lineup without Curry and Thompson would make at least Durant and Draymond near auto lock plays, and we get a slow matchup where they could also just blow the doors off the Kings. Like, what do we do with this team? Do we want to just risk it because the opportunity is too good? Do we want to fade it because we're worried they just don't totally get there at their prices? This one, I think, is also going to be one of the bigger questions of the night.
Yeah, I think you'll see Durant again with high ownership percentage. He had the unprecedented, at least for me, 99% ownership in cash games the last time we played him against LA. So that's the full-on one guy, basically, in the whole big double-up. Didn't play Kevin Durant. That's just completely nuts. And of course, he just didn't get there either. Right. he only had 45 fantasy points. The minutes did come in against LA. I think that Golden State, they're going to be a lot less able to blow teams out without Curry and Klay. And I think the combination of those two guys being missing really reduces their three-point shooting, which really reduces those explosive third quarters where Klay is leaving it up there and scoring 25 points and like Curry is just getting steals and shooting a three from 15 points beyond the three-point line or 15 feet from behind the three-point line. Without that kind of explosiveness, I think they're much more of a fair team, and not fair in terms of like average, but in terms of like playing fairly, like not just destroying teams, ripping their throats out. So I think that I'm less concerned about a blowout here than I would normally be in a 12-point line for Golden State. I think they're obviously like heavily favored to beat the crap out of Sacramento here, so I'm not worried about them losing or anything like that. But yeah, I do think the minutes are more secure here than they would be if Curry and Klay were playing.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I think that probably in the end, just I think the floor is high enough on the Durant and Green combination. And I'm going to throw Nick Young in there as well. As long as he's getting the start again, and I don't see why he wouldn't. They're just still so short on really just any kind of guard play. 31 minutes out of him last game. You can see that pretty easily happening again. And there's a chance that having Draymond back in the lineup helps him, because Draymond's core competency this season at least has been the assists. And so if you think that's the case, I don't think it's like a thing where Green walks in there and takes usage away from the guys that were starting. If anything, I think he helps improve that. So I think I'm fine playing all three of those guys and just sort of at that point just kind of fading the blowout, because you're just hoping they see the fourth quarter. But this is you mentioned it too, that this team is it's still the Warriors, and they can still blow you out. And that this bench is like, you know, Iguodala barely played last game. Caspi was a guy we thought was going to play a lot more. He was really good on his minutes, but yeah, he only played 20 minutes.
It was a heart attack, though, trying to wait for him to get those minutes, to tell you that much.
I know. I don't want to be aggressive with those two because I think that was a lot of Draymond's minutes. But this bench is pretty bad. So it's not a situation where I don't think the bench can like completely run away with the game. So I think I agree with you there. So I think we do get at least some quality fourth quarter minutes out of the Warriors. And then the Kings. I'm fully skipping them. Just have fun if you want to play them. If you want to try to run out a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein or Darren Fox because you think that they're going, this is going to be the game they play a lot of minutes and score a ton, more power to you. But I'm pretty much done with this team and even talking about them. Final game on the slate is Miami and L.A. Miami is pretty much set in the playoff picture, so they're not the last in the East, but they really can't be caught by the Pistons at this point. So they're really only playing for playoff seeding, and I'm not completely sure how important that is to them. And then you have the Lakers, who've done a nice job in the short term of just wanting to play spoiler. So kudos to them. They did not go full tank. I actually don't think they have their pick anyway. I think the Sixers have it, so it's not like they need to go nuts and completely lose every game. But they've been playing their starters a ton of minutes as well. Miami still gets a good matchup here. And they're a team, too, that's very difficult to figure out what they're going to do on a night-to-night basis. It's very hard to know. And I think I actually don't even know if they walk into the game knowing. I think they wait to see I'm not even saying that as a dig in this game. Like, so the Kings, I will think, walk into the game not knowing what they're going to do, don't really care, play whoever, doesn't matter, right? The Heat, I think that they know who they're going to start, and then Spoelstra just kind of waits to see what the matchup is going to be, and then they kind of go from there. So it's like a more thoughtful, we don't know what to do. What do we do with a Heat team that where the minutes kind of come and go? James Johnson plays 25 minutes and he plays 34. You know, Kelly Olynyk plays 32 minutes and he plays 26. Bam has still been starting, and he's been kind of decent, and he can just kind of get run off if they don't like the matchup. Is this a team that we can trust in cash games in a good matchup against the Lakers, or do we need to just say it's just so risky because, like, minutes disappear on this team quicker than really almost any other team?
No, you trust them tonight because the minutes that are disappearing tonight are already sort of known in advance. You have D-Wade out again. You have Whiteside out again. You have Richardson doubtful. That's a ton of minutes and a ton of shots and a ton of rebounds and basically a ton of everything that's going to be missing. You saw basically everyone. There were a lot of chalk plays from the Heat game the last time they played in a significantly slower matchup against Sacramento. And you saw almost all these guys pay value. So like Wayne Ellington played 35 minutes, was terrific on a $4,200 price tag. James Johnson, you mentioned already. Bam got his minutes. He was good. I think up and down, you're going to see this might be the highest owned team of the night. The combination of great matchup and a lot of availability of minutes. And it just lends more certainty to everything, right? Like when you take a guy like Richardson, listed as doubtful right now, you take away he hadn't been playing as much because he was already dealing with his foot thing. But over time, the disappearance of his 35 to 37 minutes a game, that really adds up and matters. I mean, D-Wade was basically coming in, having incredible usage with a second unit. You take those 25 minutes off, those really get redistributed too. So I actually think that, yeah, the Heat, you can see everyone from Goran Dragic to Tyler Johnson, Ellington, Winslow got ownership last time. You could see that again. Johnson, Bam. There's five or six Heat in play at these prices tonight.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I always just get so scared because, even if you look at that last game, they did start Luke Babbitt, but that was a starter in name only. He just got in there so they could just keep something of the same rotations without Richardson in there. But you get Winslow at 38. It was 33 minutes in regulation. You get Ellington with 31 minutes in regulation. You just get I don't know, a lot of minutes even from the bench guys, and I'm still just have a little PTSD from rostering these guys and being wrong. Like, being wrong as much as right when it's in terms of like, yo, he's starting tonight, this is gonna be the place where the minutes go, and then they just don't.
I agree at the power forward spot in particular, but like, there's just so many minutes available that it gets harder and harder to be wrong on the minutes the more really significant players you take out of the equation.
And then on the Lakers side, this is a slow matchup against the Heat. Now, they are favored, and this game has by far the highest total. Well, I take that back. Philly is 219. This one's 220. But this one's a much tighter spread than other game. 220 over-under with Lakers minus 3.5-point favorites. They are a team, too, that's played their guys a ton of minutes. Now, Kuzma sat last game, and he is questionable right now. But Ingram is still out. We've been pretty solidly playing the starters, not the same ones each time, but the Lonzo Ball, KCP, Randall, even Brook Lopez has snuck in there at times, and Kuzma when he plays, have been guys that we've been happy to roster. Isaiah Thomas to draw the start from Kuzma last game. Are we still in the same place with them? Their prices have climbed up, but they're still more than any other team. This team has actually, in the short term, been one of the safest teams in terms of just rotational minutes, really in the whole entire NBA. Are we still trusting them, even though the prices have come up a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think they're all created equal in my mind. Like, Lopez seems to me to be by far the least safe of this crew, particularly if Kuzma comes back and starts getting his minutes. But yeah, like, Lonzo Ball, 40 minutes against Denver, 38 against Golden State, he's going to be out there. KCP, now at 6,100, the price has come down a little bit. He's been paying that price really reliably outside of a tough matchup against Golden State. So both of those guys firmly in play for me. You slide on over to power forward, you got Julius Randle, the price has come down a little bit there. It's a tougher matchup, but you know, you go down the game log and it's not hard to imagine him getting pretty significant fantasy production on this price point as well. Like, you basically only have to, you have the two games against Denver and Orlando, which I get are good matchups. But after that, you have to go all the way back to Valentine's Day, Doug, you know me, my favorite holiday, and you'll see the 30-point performance against New Orleans. Outside of that, paying this price in spades. So Kuzma's availability certainly boosts the my opinion of guys like Randall and Brook Lopez in particular, but regardless of his availability, I think you'll see pretty significant ownership on the Lakers side, and I think it's correct even in a slow and relatively tough matchup with Miami.
Yeah, I think if I had to rank them in terms of just what I thought was safety as in comparison to their price, at least on FanDuel, I would go Julius Randall is really at the top, then probably KCP, then Lonzo, then Isaiah Thomas, I think, and then with Lopez fourth or fifth. But I think yeah. I think Randall of that whole entire group, he's been a guy where we've only waited for him to just play the minutes. He was just Luke Walton was too quick to pull the trigger at time. Well, it seemed too quick to pull the trigger to get him off the court earlier in the season. That has not been the case, and he's been awesome. He's double doubled in four of his last five games. He gets into the paint. His post game is awesome. He's just a guy we were just waiting for the minutes. And if 35 to 37 minutes is going to be the normal for him, then he's just simply underpriced on FanDuel at only 7,400. Actually, almost criminally underpriced on FanDuel at that price. So he among all the other guys stands out to me head and shoulders above the rest, with the rest of the guys kind of just being upside plays at their prices. All right, we're going to get out of here. We will be back again next week on Tuesday talking more basketball. Enjoy a, I guess, a little smaller Friday night in the NBA, buddy. I'll talk to you again next week.
Peace.